changing careers is a very natural thing. It shouldn't be anything that feels unattainable. What's right around you? How can you take the first step tomorrow? You don't have to take that 10th step that involves, I've got to do applications for school or I've got to move to this city. No, what can you do where you are and start to do a little bit every day?
I'm Carly Zakin.
And I'm Danielle Weisberg.
Welcome to 9to5-ish with the Skin.
We've run into so many questions over the years and had so many moments where we needed advice, and we got it from women who'd been there.
And that's what we're bringing you with this show. Each week, we're helping you get what you want out of your career by talking to the smartest leaders we know.
Because we know your work life is a lot more than 9to5.
All right, let's get into it. Our guest is Ava DuVernay. We are so excited. She's a prolific director and filmmaker and has a laundry list of firsts. She's the first Black woman to be nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Director. She is also the first Black woman to direct a film nominated for a Best Picture Oscar. And she is the first Black woman to direct a film with a budget over $100 million. You may know her from her Oscar-nominated films, Selma and 13th, as well as her Emmy-nominated Netflix series, When They See Us. She has collaborated with the likes of Oprah and Beyonce, and today she is here to talk with us about her career and latest project, Origin. Ava, welcome to 9to5-ish.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
We're very excited to dig in. Okay, Ava, we're going to start with the scariest part of our show, the lightning round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is the last book you read?
Cast by Isabel Wilkerson.
We're going to get into that. What is the first job you got paid for?
Scooping frozen yogurt at the local mall when I was 15.
What is your go-to frozen yogurt topping?
Heath bar.
Oh, you don't hear that a lot these days.
I like to shake it up.
Okay. Who is an actor that you have not worked with yet, but you really want to?
Goodness. That's a tough one. Maybe I say Forest Whitaker.
I would love you guys to work together. What's something we can't Google about you?
You can't Google anything about my love life. You'll find zero.
One person you will want to have at a dinner party, alive or dead.
I really admire a woman named Maria Ressa. She won the Nobel Peace Prize a couple of years ago, a journalist from the Philippines. I had an occasion to be at a dinner with her and was fascinated and was very sad when the dinner was over.
Such a nice thing to say about someone.
I know, nobody's ever said that about me.
You were sad when the dinner was over. What is the worst piece of advice you've gotten?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure. I can't think of it because I probably didn't retain it. I had to try to focus on the positive.
What is something we cannot Google about your new project, Origin?
I don't know if you could Google how much joy was embedded in every day, how much fun we had making this film, the late nights in production office when we were prepping, watching movies with the crew and the department heads just to get a feel for the themes or just to have silly times to decompress. It was an experience that was filled with joy every day.
Okay, my last lightning round question is, if you were to do a cameo on a show or a movie, what would it be?
I'll say The Bachelor. And I would just come in and tell the women, girl, you're in danger.
Did you watch The Golden Bachelor?
I was shooting and in post-production, but I got the lowdown from good friends. Uh-huh. Imagine Black women recreating the episodes and telling me the good parts. It was better than the show, trust. So fantastic.
Okay, so when we were doing prep, we're interviewing you. You know, we're going back into your career. And literally, my thought process is I'm reading and I'm like, oh my gosh, she started working in news just like us. And then the next sentence was, and then she quickly left.
Right.
So it's like she was like, quickly disillusioned and left. So when you were at UCLA, you interned at CBS News, and not just during any time, but during the time of the O.J. Simpson trial, which was a very unique time in news. What made you leave? What made you kind of decide, like, this is not going to be for me?
I think, you know, probably on the day it was suggested that if I wanted to look through the trash of the juror I was sitting outside of the house for, I could. And I thought, I don't want to do that. This is not what I kind of got into it for. And to be fair, that trial really, I think, signaled a turning point in many ways in terms of celebrity sensationalism and the really kind of murky line between what was news and what was the propaganda of celebrity weirdness. And it was right in that time where there were decisions to be made as to what I wanted to pursue. And I decided not to keep going in that direction.
So it's interesting the direction that you ultimately, our listeners know you for. You didn't really start on that path until you were in your 30s, which in the long run, you clearly have done so much in a short amount of time. And I think a lot of people feel like they have to know what they want to do or be on a certain path as they are starting out. What advice do you have for people changing careers? I think directing especially can be a male-dominated industry.
I will say in general, you know, to think about changing careers is a very natural thing. It shouldn't be anything that feels weird, you know? Shouldn't be anything that feels unattainable to you or something that is outside of the realm of possibility. Because you fell into something, because you decided on something 20 years ago, 10 years ago, last year, doesn't mean that you can't change, because as human beings, we are made to change and life is change. And so this idea that, oh my gosh, a second career, oh my gosh, you changed at 32 or at 54 or whatever, it's just a weird construct that I think we buy into for some reason. We're socialized to believe that that's the way. And it's just really not. So when you take that off, then what? Then what do you want to do? And knowing that there's no timeline on that, that it doesn't all have to be right away, that the good parts are the steps, right? The good part isn't getting there. The good part is the steps to get there. And you start taking steps.
Before I would like move on to the next topic, what was the first step that you took in pivoting towards film that you were like, oh, this is clicking?
I started to watch DVD commentaries on the DVDs of the films that I loved. So I would usually just watch the film. But when I started thinking more about directing and the making of the film, I would watch the DVD commentaries. And I would watch the DVD commentary before I'd watch the movie. I would then watch DVD commentaries on movies that I'd seen long ago, that I'd never seen, that I wasn't interested, but just was interested in that director, or that style, or that one scene. Kind of gave myself the beginnings of a film school education by doing something that was really easy, right on my television, opening myself up to the idea. You know, it's kind of like reading a book on the thing that you might want to do, or talking to someone who does it. Those early steps are so vital. They start to form in your mind, you know, what the possibilities are. And, you know, usually it's something that's right within reach. And so that's what I did. And that's what I try to encourage people to do. What's right around you? How can you take the first step tomorrow? You don't have to take that 10th step that involves, I've got to do applications for school, or I've got to move to this city. No, what can you do where you are and start to do a little bit every day?
I'm laughing because I used to watch the DVD commentaries too, but you really took it to heart in a much more productive way than I ever did.
Funny.
Let's talk about the role of joy in your work, which I found in reading about joy and the meaning that it has for you and how you decide to take on projects. You also obviously cover very heavy things. So how do you put the two together? And what is that like in showing up on set and the culture that you create?
Yeah, I feel like my films are about triumph and joy. And so it's not a big disconnect to, you know, in the telling of those stories when I know what the end will be. In order to tell a story of triumph, you have to overcome something. You know, and in order to tell a story about joy, you have to have an obstacle so that the joy feels worth it and earned. And so every day, having the privilege of being able to choose the stories that I want to work on, to be able to generate my own stories, to be able to raise the money on Origin, to be able to make it from my own company, to be able to travel the world to tell stories with my friends and people I decide to work with. I mean, who gets to do that? What is there not to be in complete love with or enjoy with? And so, you know, every day I wake up in this process grateful. And that is not in contrast to the work that I'm making. Even if I'm making intense scenes that day, I know that they are to meet a certain end and that they're on the road to the destination of our story, which is going to be one that is a positive.
How do you take that mindset and either get through a frustrating work day, like, you know, maybe you're disagreeing with somebody or, you know, have a creative differences, or maybe it's just a day of like a heavy scene that's sitting with you, and find that joy? Like, how do you actually transition from whatever the either source of frustration or source of just like heaviness to find the joy in that?
Yeah, well, the source of my frustration or any kind of hard day for me would not be the scene itself, because I prep. So I've prepared myself. So by the time I get to the set, I am very well versed in whatever hard thing we're doing. I've cried over it in the writing. I've thought about every which way it could work well or go wrong. I'm really prepared at that point. Obviously, anything can happen, but usually I've thought it through and I'm there pretty present and ready. A difference of opinion is something that doesn't really ruffle my feathers as long as it's being done respectfully. And I surround myself with people as much as possible that, you know, I don't fuss with, I don't have to argue with. That's something that's taken time to get to that point where I can have that kind of decision making. But generally, I'm a human being. So anytime you go home and you have a tough day, there's only one way, you know, to deal with it. And that's cookies.
Yeah. What go-to flavor?
I prefer frozen double stuffed Oreos with very cold milk and, you know, in a dark room.
That's healthy.
I really support that.
You do what you must.
I really, really support that. And I'm very similar again. So I feel like we're back on the same wavelength.
Good, good. I'm glad we're back.
One of the things that I loved reading about you was you've partnered with Netflix in the past, and you've mentioned having an access to a trove of data on audience responses.
I don't know about trove.
Well, Netflix probably has.
They have a trove.
Yeah, they have a trove.
They give me a small sprinkling.
So yes. My question is, as someone that creates and, you know, makes art in different forms, how do you think about the data and the art living hand in hand when you're starting off with a vision?
Yeah, I don't think about the data in the making, but I think it's fascinating on the back end. And I've resisted it in the past because a lot of times the studios and the streamers, I've heard and I've experienced, they use it as they weaponize it. You know, this test screening is doing this, so we must change this, or this isn't testing well, so we aren't going to go into that many theaters or give those marketing dollars. That kind of stuff is used all the time with filmmakers. It's very unfortunate. But I've been on the beautiful side of it, whereas you're able to look at data that really highlights what's working, what people are responding to, what people don't understand, what we can push a little bit more in the marketing so that we're setting up the story a little bit more. One of the things that I like to do in the screenings for Origin at the end in my Q&As is to ask people, are there, you know, how many love stories can you find? And people yelling out the different moments of love that they see in the film. And every screening, there's something startling that I haven't heard before. Every single one, and I've done dozens of them, connections that people make that I wasn't even aware of, but that are there in the film and that people take. So that kind of data, both anecdotal and hard data, I really just take as a cherry on top. It doesn't guide the work, but it certainly, you know, adds sprinkling of connection to audience that is a good thing to have.
You know, we're talking to you at a time when both of our industries, when I say like, you know, media at large, so we're obviously in digital media, like you're in, you know, on the entertainment side of it, are going through transformations. The business models are transforming, the platforms are transforming, compensations are transforming, like all of this is just, there's a lot of change. And I think when you go through moments in time like that, there are foundational things that I find, what do I really believe in? And how is that going to guide my next step, Danielle, and my next step? As you kind of experience that in the entertainment industry, what are sort of the truths or the things that you hold most valuable that you're leaning on as a lot of things just shift, and who knows what the industry looks like 2 years from now?
Well, the first thing is those shifts are opportunities. They're cracks in the foundation. And the crack is where you apply pressure and to break it open. And so I like the idea of disrupting institutions, systems, structures that we're told this is the way it is. This is who's allowed to be here. This is the way this goes. This is how you do this. In my industry right now, nobody knows what the heck is going on. Nobody knows what tomorrow's going to be or the next day's going to be. And you know what? Great. Because I got some ideas, you know, and they're not ideas to be pitched. They're ideas to be executed. And that's what we do at Array, my narrative change collective for the last 10 years, disrupting systems. And so it's hard to do it when everything's so locked. Much more exciting to do it when everyone's like, what do we do next? And so I'm embracing this time. And the things that are important to me are to be in community. It's no fun doing it alone, and it's harder. So it's really getting out of Hollywood as much as possible, connecting with, as Niecy Nash says in the movie Origin, real people, real things. And it's hard sometimes when you work in these industries, as we do, you start to just only talk to the people in your industry. You're only reading those trades. You're only concerned with what's going on. And it feels so big. This was happening to me 2 weeks ago. And then I went to Atlanta and I was in a community screening. And then I was at Spelman and I was at Morehouse and I was with students and I was with people in the community who have no idea what is going on here and just want to see the friggin' movie. And it stripped it down to what really mattered, the story and the audience to see the story. And all of the hullabaloo around it became a lot less important. And the path between story and audience becomes more clear. And so those are the things that are important to me. How do I tell my stories the way I want? Which I feel pretty far along that road. And the part I have to figure out now is how to get it to the audience directly without having to jump through hoops and go through this traditional structure. And the good thing is the traditional structures are collapsing. So lucky me, you know, we can figure out that next part.
Who do you go to for advice, if anyone, on the business side?
On the business side, I talk to other filmmaker friends who are doing their own deals and things a bit. But, you know, we share experiences. I talk to a friend of mine who used to have a talk show. And
could it be her name rhymes with Chopra?
Perhaps.
Deepak.
Deepak, exactly.
You talked to Deep, okay.
Who has a wealth of experience in a different part of the field, but also just in terms of, you know, completely useful in terms of the way to deal with tough situations. And so that's always helpful. And, you know, read a lot, listen a lot. I think some of the best lessons that I've embraced are things that I've ear hustled, right? Just stay quiet and listen. Sometimes stop talking.
I love that phrase.
And you can hear, you know, all kinds of things if you are not the one always talking. And so that is a way that I've learned a lot and I lean into quite a bit.
How do you decide when you're looking at stories, whether you're meeting people, reading books, that it's a story that you love and it's a story you want to tell? How do you decide which material is right for you?
It's a great question, and I've thought about it, and all I can say is it's not a decision, it's just a calling. It picks you, you're doing this. And it's not a should I do this or this for me? Because I don't get offered scripts, so it's not like I have a stack of scripts and I got to pick script 14, 17, or 2. I self-generate, and it needs to be something that I actually want to pour a couple years of my life into and think about and carry over the finish line on my back. And so that is a very unique feeling to feel like I'll take it. I will do it. I am the teller and I will do what it takes to tell it. And so it's really not a decision. It becomes impossible to get out of your ear. It's like someone screaming in your ear, make me, make me. And so that's what I make.
I'm going to assume that your friend whose name rhymes with Chopra, but is not Deepak, has seen Origin. What was that friend's reaction?
I don't know. I like to let people say their own reactions, but, you know, very supportive.
I want to get to a question from our newsletter audience. And they want to know, what is the best way to create a strong relationship with a collaborator or coworker? What's the secret to a good working partnership?
Stop talking. Listen. That's the main thing. Ask a question and then really listen. I think so often people ask questions and then are just waiting to hear themselves speak again. You can learn so much when you really just listen to what people are saying. And the one thing about listening that I've really realized in the last maybe 2 to 3 months is people tell you what they want you to know. And I'll just be really clear. Sometimes I'm listening to people and I'll think, oh, why did they tell me that? Why did they include that in the answer? Because they want me to know that, right? And so when you really are listening to what they're saying, not just as passive information, but as selections that the person is making to inform you and creating a work collaboration or a work relationship, you are being given a roadmap to how to work successfully or how to be successfully partnered with that person. Same thing for romantic relationships, first dates. Wait, what are you saying? What are you saying? What are you not saying? Why are you selecting these things to share with me? So it's the same thing in a job interview. It's the same thing in a first meeting with a potential collaborator. Everything that's being said is being processed as, let me show myself to you. And so to really metabolize that, right, in a way that's going to be healthy for the relationship, you got to hear it and you got to listen.
What was it about Origin that kept speaking to you that you couldn't get out of your ear?
I was captivated by the information, and it really connected with me in a very emotional way. So for me, I was interested in how could I take the aha moments from the book and put it into an accessible film that was character-driven, where those aha moments were all strung together in a way that just felt like a cascade of meaning, right? And so that became an exciting proposition to be able to be the teller of that story. And once that got in my head, I was like a bone, you know, I couldn't let it go. Yeah.
Ava, congratulations on the new film. We cannot wait to see it. And thank you so much for spending time with us. So fascinating to hear from you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9to5ish with The Skim. A new episode will be in your feed again next Wednesday. And if you want to keep up with us in between episodes, follow us on Instagram @Carly and Danielle.
It's a really good account, I promise.